time to game classy.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I hear you now. You were going in and out.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
I was probably, you know what? I was fiddling with volume, so that's probably what you heard.
Fiddling with the volume.
Yeah. I like fiddling with the volume.
Yeah. I don't even know anymore. I am so ready for this year to be over. I'm ready for the decade to be over. The 2020s so far, not great. We're done with them.
Worst decade.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you consider 2020 to be part of like the 2011 to 2020, or is it 2020 to 2009 or 2029?
I see people argue about that all the time, and I guess I don't know. Like, I think this being the capper kind of if I was writing reality as a story,
yeah,
this year being the capper would make more sense than being the start.
Yeah, you know what, this year in and of, I think I kind of agree with you in that we kind of went through a very long, since 2010 I believe we've been on a massive downslide.
Yes, I agree.
And I don't want to blame anyone in particular, but I'm blaming Tea Party people.
No, it's absolutely right wingers, but
white wingers. Yeah,
white wingers.
They have really just like screwed the decade as a whole.
Yeah. Although that did start before. I watched a very interesting and lengthy documentary.
Lengthy.
Where it was it basically like talked about how 9/11 trutherism is what has brought us to this point. And they made a very convincing argument. They said that it laid the groundwork for the post-fact society. And it laid the groundwork for things like QAnon. Just insane conspiracy theorists. And like that's kind of like where that would be the foundation.
I could see that, because it's like it happened right as the internet was becoming a legit thing. Like, I mean, people don't remember nowadays because, you know, most of the kids that, you know, most of the, you know, teens in their 20s, they missed kind of this era of like when the internet was burgeoning, you know, like when it was like a brand new thing for a lot of people, let's say our age.
Yeah.
And so they don't quite understand like the blooming of idiocy that happened because of it.
Yes. I mean, and that's a lot of like boomer brainwashing, because like they just like they, it's like there's a meme, like a tweet meme from like fucking, you know, 4 years ago, where it's just like it was like, your mom in 1998, be careful and don't believe everything you read on the internet. Your mom today, yeah. I read on freedomeagle.org that Hillary eats babies.
Freedomeagle.org. Yeah. Wait a second. You're telling me that freedomeagle.org is back up? I thought it got taken down when it found out that it was just a front for the Daily Stormer or whatever it was.
And I thought that was pretty reasonable, and I was like, you know, that makes sense to me. That the documentary like seemed to, that, and it didn't particularly like, I mean, obviously it had a, I guess if you were to say it had a political bias, the political bias was it favored like things that were true and objectively true. Yeah. Not like, you know, not political opinions of like, I think that, you know, welfare or joblessness should be handled in this way. More like, you know, are vaccines real? that's what we're talking about, which is hilarious because that's political now.
It took on a life of its own. I had an actual Steve moment on the internet. Now I've been really off of Facebook and Reddit and Twitter and everything. I've just kind of like stayed in the background. However, I still look at Facebook, A, for this podcast, and B, just, you know, when people post stuff on my page or whatever else, you know, just to stay up to date. And I use Messenger. But I did see when I opened it up one day, a friend of mine, a very dear friend, she has some weird relative that always posts like that, you know, freedomeagle.org stuff. Put something about how vaccines are going to, like, Bill Gates vaccine and blah, 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 blah. And I just posted on there. I go, you believe in vaccines? You're a fucking idiot. Next thing you're going to tell me that we landed on the moon.
That is, you know what? I told you that's the best.
It's really the only way.
because they lose so much of their conspiracy. So like, if you argue the reality of the world and you argue facts, they get their normal defense mechanisms work.
Yes.
Their insanity, their ad hominem, their stuff that has nothing to do with anything. It doesn't make any fucking sense. But if you actually attack them from an even more absurdist standpoint than theirs, it's phenomenal. Like, they just don't, because they have no prepared defense for it. Because it's just like, you think vaccines are real? They're all placebos. Yeah. Vaccines are all placebos.
No. They're not placebos, Steve. It's actually, what they're doing is they're poisoning you with Pizzagate sauce.
No, see, but that's what they, then they would just agree with you.
Oh, I see.
See, that's the thing. You have to escalate, and you have to escalate to a level where like it's just so absurd. It's just like I shit you not. Back when I was more into arguing with political people online, just for the fuck of it, because obviously no one's ever going to get convinced. I did a couple. There's a my couple crowning achievements in this is one. I basically got a guy to like openly embrace Nazis. Because he was trying to argue that like his position was more ethical. He was classic right wing bullshit, and he was trying to argue that his white nationalists and stuff like weren't part of his group. And I'm like, yeah, they are. Like, those are literally your guys. Like, they're a huge part of your voter base. And like so on. And like eventually, I got him to just like admit he would rather be on the side of white nationalists than a leftist. And I was just like, see, there you go. So you're a racist. Yep. So that was really funny. And like then he just like openly was like, yeah, I guess I am. And I'm like, there you go. Like it wasn't that cathartic to admit you're a piece of shit instead of trying to hide it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where a lot of the anger comes from, is like, they just can't admit, like, once they admit like, yes, I am a piece of shit. Like, and that's the whole thing with leftists too, is that we already admit that we are pieces of shit. Like, we have that internal knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, that's the insatiable lust for death that everyone who is, who has truly embraced being a doomer, or like, if you're a doomer leftist, like, you have the thirst for death. And
I'm not quite there yet. I have a thirst for life.
Oh yeah, see, I'm totally doomer, baby. Like,
yeah,
you're never disappointed when you're a doomer.
No.
You see articles or that big breakthrough documentary that talked about, that just came out, where it's like, all like 90% of the plastic that exists was thrown in the trash, and all of the recycling efforts were invented just to sell more plastic.
Yep.
And as a doomer, I'm like, but if I were, someone who believed that there was a future for humanity, that might upset me.
Yeah. It upsets me a little bit. Yeah. I enjoy cheese way too much to embrace death. There's always a new cheese to try.
Nice. The second crowning achievement I had in my political arguments was, I straight up convinced like half of a Facebook group that Donald Trump was a long-term plan schemed by the Clintons as a plant. I was like, they donated to him. Don't you understand? It was all rigged. Hillary ran against him so he would have a chance to win. Nobody else would have lost. And like, I went with this like insane conspiratorial web and just used like anecdotal things and like random pictures and so on and so forth. And like, I got half of them believing my bullshit that I was just making up on the fly. And I was like, these people are idiots. It's like, no wonder the Democrats lose constantly. They're trying to argue with these people. You can't.
Nope. And I think I'm hoping that is one thing that people will learn from this election, is that pointing out either side political hypocrisy does irrelevant. Absolutely nothing. No one cares.
Yeah, doesn't matter. No one gives a shit. They only care about their team winning. They don't care about anything else. Like,
yep.
nothing, there are, and that goes for everyone. Like, no one cares. There are no standards. And the people who have standards don't vote in big enough numbers.
Oh yeah.
Because it just, that's just the way it, because like, if
well, they don't vote in big enough numbers because there's like four of us in the entire planet.
Also true. And then, there's voter suppression stuff. Like, there's like the red county that has 167 voters that has one polling place, and the blue county that has 4.6 million voters that has one polling place. So yes, the system is fundamentally broken, and it's working as intended. And unfortunately, what is intended is us getting, insanity left and right.
Oh yeah. That's why I've literally just shut myself off from the rest of the world at this point. I'm hiding it. I'm pulling a Steve and just hiding in my house.
Hey, consistently. Man, you know what? It's smart.
It's smart. yeah. But the speaking of weird conspiracy and like that weird stuff, there's a documentary on Amazon. I don't know if you've seen it. You probably have not watched it, but you may have seen it pop up on your feed. It's called Missing 411. Have you heard of this?
No.
I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, because I've followed the guy who made the documentary. His name's okay. David Politis. He's this author. He used to be a cop, and he kind of got drawn into this world of missing people. And like, where they go, you know, is there any commonality between these? And he's like, his whole big thing is he's found these clusters of missing people across the United States. Mm-hmm. And what does it mean that like these people are clustered in these specific places? Like, it's always around like a park or a forested area, and there's always water. And it's like these really like simple common themes.
That sounds like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's the classic XKCD where he's like, you know, cause and a correlation is not always causation, you know?
Yes. It's like it's the total classic. This chart is a thing that proves something. And it's like, that chart is just a
it's just a population map. It's a heat population heat map. Yeah, is really what it is. So he's always like, I don't know why Yellowstone is such a hot spot for this. I'm like, well, Yellowstone is a place that a lot of people go who want to enjoy the outdoors, but have no business being in the outdoors, you know? So they go and they do stupid shit and they end up dying. You know, I'm one of those people who has no business being outdoors. I will go and enjoy a walk around maybe the local lake at a park district, but that is it. I'm not going to go camping. I would love to go to Yellowstone to enjoy it, but I'm going to stay in the big lodge and sleep in a nice big comfy bed, enjoy the trails, and then go back. I'm not going to go wander off the trails or anything like that, because that's how people die. But it's really funny.
It's true, because that's how people, and it's like every disappearances aren't mysterious. Disappearances are not mysterious. It's very, every disappearance is very simple. You've got, all right, so it's, was there trouble at home? That's like number one. Like, did this person run away? That's like a super common answer of why someone is gone. They ran away because they were being abused or.
Well, so the latest one is actually about hunters who go missing. And you watch the documentary and they're all like,
by a goddamn bear.
Well, yeah. Well, you watch the documentary and like, I think out of the four stories he talks about in the documentary of these disappearances, three of them were over 60. So it's like, obviously these guys had a heart attack and fell into a river, or they got drunk and wandered off. One of them was really funny, because the guy was like, you know, we run a really clean and sober camp out here. And it's like, you know, very Southern. And I'm like, I guarantee you these guys are Baptist, and they just didn't want to admit that they were drinking. Because if you admit you're drinking while you're a Baptist, it's like a very, you know, faux pas.
Baptists, the Catholics of the South.
Not quite, but...
Catholics are the Baptists of the North, and Baptists are the Catholics of the South.
Well, I don't understand that correlation, because Catholics tend to get drunk quite a bit.
Oh, no, I just meant if you're like, religious zealotry comes in the United States, religious zealotry comes in two flavors. Either you've got the Catholics or you've got the Baptists, but both are just as zealous as one another, perhaps in different ways.
Yeah, but, I was gonna say Catholics are not. It depends, I guess. But
that's why. Well, I mean, so it's very simple. When you see like the frothing mouth breather anti-abortion people in the northern states, they're likely Catholics. When you see them in the southern states, they're likely Baptists.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
It's that kind of thing. It's like, they're not the same, hence why I say they are the Baptists of the north, and then the Baptists are the Catholics.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And then of course, both have extremely large, very huge, very proven, decades and 100-year-long pedophile rings.
Absolutely.
That's a fact, Jack. The Baptist one, that's the only two. The back to conspiracy shit, all of the fucking, you know, talking about like the child trafficking stuff, and it's like, motherfucker, the entire southern half of the United States just had a Baptist child sex ring blown wide open, and nobody gave a shit. No, like, nobody commented.
That's part of the capstone of having a story break in 2020.
I guess that, you know what, you might be right there. I guess that's, you know what, that's fair.
We literally live at a time where it's like, when a new story like that breaks, we're just like, just add it to the pile.
Yeah, yeah, that would have dominated the new, it might have dominated the news cycle for weeks, but now it's just like, oh, whatever.
It's just added to the pile of shit that we got to care about.
Added to the pile.
Yeah. No, there's another one on Prime 2 that I would suggest. You might actually like it a little bit because it's a little absurd. It's called Hellier, and it's about this group of like ghost hunters who are investigating, and I shit you not, in Kentucky, goblins.
That is fucking awesome.
Well, and but okay, so I set up that so it could be funny, but there actually is in the conspiracy world, or I should say the cryptozoological world, which I, you know, I'm a big fan of. I'm an amateur cryptozoologist. There's a very famous sighting of Kentucky goblins that happened about 50 years ago, but I mean they're obviously aliens. Like, they just didn't have the verbiage to call them aliens, you know, 50-60 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now, because we kind of know, like, oh, they're short, they're green, they have really big eyes and like spindly arms and legs,
they're the Greys.
Yeah, it's obviously an alien, you know. We have that language now, but they didn't have back then. But this documentary, it's a couple parts. I'm only 3 episodes in, so I don't know. It seems so fake, and I don't mean fake as in like they're
trying to perpetrate a fraud.
Yeah,
it's not that.
It seems almost like a fake mockumentary, like Blair Witch style. Not
or like this is Spinal Tap.
Not like Spinal Tap. It would be much funnier if it was like Spinal Tap, but this is more like Blair Witch, where it's almost like found footage esque. But it's not found footage. It's like an actual documentary. It's just very well done, but it feels so like almost scripted in some ways. Mm. That it makes me, it's a fun watch, and I recommend it.
Nice.
Yeah. Did you start Bly Manor yet?
Bly Manor?
It's Bly Manor. It's the sequel to Hill House from last year.
Oh shit, I didn't know that existed. I will binge it.
Well, it just dropped yesterday, and it's very, very British. So if you're into that like 60s, 70s style British horror that's really like haunted house horror, it's definitely it's up your alley.
What's its proximity to a Hammer horror film?
It's very similar to a Hammer horror film. Not like,
and that sounds dope.
But what I mean by that is like, it's a nanny who gets, you know, hired by this rich businessman to watch after his niece and nephew whose parents died at Bly Manor. And so it's got a lot of that, like, it's an American who comes over to England and his nanny and blah, blah, blah. But it's also the same thing as Hill House, where there's like a lot of probably emotional backstory to it that I don't give two shits about. I just want to see scary ghosts.
Oh, yeah. I didn't care about the emotional backstory either for Hill House.
But, yeah,
the ghosts were excellent in Hill House. Like, yeah, that scene where they're all, the thing I liked the most about Hill House is that it did something that I don't think enough horror movies do, where there's that scene where there's three characters who are just talking in the when they're in the funeral parlor, and then there's like the active ghost like essentially attack when there's multiple, because like that's super uncommon in a horror film where it's like there are multiple people in a situation where it's not spooky, and then suddenly like the ghost comes to them. And I thought that scene was exceptionally terrifying. It was very good. That was very well done.
Yeah.
I really, really liked it.
I there were parts of Hill House that I really liked. I think that it's part of the nature of Netflix series where it's just too long. It went on way too many episodes.
Yeah, Netflix series. That's a problem with series in general, I found.
Well, yeah, it's a big Netflix problem, because Netflix, when they put out the order, they say you're getting a 10 episode order, so you have to fill 10 episodes.
Yeah,
like you can't just
gonna,
do.
It almost feels like they're gonna pad it.
Yeah, it does. It's not like they're like, well, how many episodes do you need to tell the story? It's right. More like you have 10 episodes to tell the story, and you're like, oh, well, shit. So they always pad it out, and it ends up being like 2 or 3 episodes too long. And so like Hill House, as I always said, the scariest thing about Hill House was just its family. Like ghosts weren't scary. The fact that this heroin addict may at some point have to deal with children is terrifying to me.
Yes. Yeah. So there was definitely the family subplot thing, which was like, I mean, if you're interested in like the dramas an interpersonal relationship with a dysfunctional family, I mean, that's probably fine for me. I was just like, let's get to the spooks.
That's what I was like too. And
But in this case, you know, I find in a lot of cases, you know, in the horror genre, when the director or writer gets really focused on the interpersonal drama, they push that too hard and they reduce the spookiness too much.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I thought Hill House was very, very well balanced. It was a bit too long, agreed. But I thought overall the balance was pretty good.
Yeah, and also the amount of black mold in that house I think was terrifying. As a homeowner myself, I will tell you, the spookiest thing is house depreciation. It's house value depreciation.
There was a lot of black mold in that house.
Yeah, but yeah, that's kind of like I've been on a spooktacular review since October started.
Nice. Yeah, I gotta get in on that.
Yeah, you gotta catch it. It makes me sad that like I wish we had more Joe Bob for Halloween. I think he usually does like a Halloween special, but
we'll see. I'm sure there'll be more Joe Bob. They did 100% confirm that there is going to be another full season of Joe Bob as well. So I don't know what that means time frame wise, but they'll probably do a Halloween Hootenanny. They usually do.
Yeah. For everybody listening, sorry. Welcome to Game Classy. I'm Joe. This is Steve.
Welcome to Politicast, where we're talking about
a lot of things, but
politics for the first 45 minutes of the podcast.
We'll talk about some gaming stuff in a minute. But what I wanted to talk about with Steve is the problematic opening to the movie Fright Night, the original.
I haven't seen Fright Night since I was very young, but fuck, I love Fright Night.
Okay, so I was like, you know what? I haven't watched Fright Night in a long time. I'm gonna watch it. I put it on. And it is honestly one of the most beautifully shot movies I've seen in a long time, right? It's got some wonderful cinematography in there.
I remember loving Fright Night, Fright Night.
Well, I mean,
the vampires were fucking terrifying too. Yeah, that was the first movie where actually looked scary.
I'm also pretty scared of Chris Sarandon as well. But you're watching it and you're like, oh, this is really cool. And you like hear these like screams coming from inside a house. And like, of course they do the double take where it's actually on TV, but there's this great pan and shot through the window and you see, you know, the two leads making out on the floor, and it pretty much almost devolves into sexual assault, which is so problematic nowadays. I mean, it's problematic back then, but now it's like once you're...
Dude, stuff age... The amount of things that are aging like milk is very fast. And like just watching some Mad TV sketches, I'm just like, holy shit. Like, damn, this was only like... This is only like 15, 20 years ago. Like, holy fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I can compartmentalize it and say like, okay, people thought this was okay in the 80s, put it in that section of my brain. But in Fright Night, it's so in your face rough that I'm kind of like, oh, no. Well,
I mean, for me, like, I don't get too cringy about anything that occurs like that in a horror film specifically, because it's a fucking horror film. Like, that's the point. It's supposed to be things that are not good and things that are bad and make you uncomfortable.
I know there's a different thing. I'd much rather see like a vampire tear open someone and eat their entrails than see sexual assault.
For sure. Yeah. And that's why it's, you know, that's why the horror genre is so massive. And that's why it's, you know, that's why it's great that there's lots of different types of horror movies. And there's, you know, you can have the gore ones, the psychological ones, this one, that one, you know, that's why the horror genre is so like, serious. I'm going to, you know, brass tacks. I haven't watched anything that isn't a horror film in like over a year now, I think. Like all I watch is horror. Like I just watch horror movies. Like,
you don't watch any sci-fi?
Well, I watch horror sci-fi. Hey, shout outs to Event Horizon.
No, you gotta expand your mind. You gotta watch a little bit. You gotta watch some fantasy. You gotta watch some Conan.
There, obviously the classics are fine. Like I watch classic movies, seriously. But like, you know, Conan is obviously a movie I will watch. I love Conan. Aliens, you know, the Aliens, which is the amazing horror slash sci-fi, and then sci-fi action for Aliens, I should say. Alien is horror.
You sci-fi. Also watch a lot of anime.
Actually, I haven't been at all. No, it's been a long time. I've been on a little bit of a, but I've passed the point of being able to try and keep up with seasonal anime. That's too much. That's super hard. Like, I mean, there's not a lot of episodes. Like, for most of the shows, like, they usually only end up being like 10 or 12 episodes total, and they're, you know, like 24 minutes each. So it's not that much to watch. Like, if I wanted to you know, get through it, you know, it's 4 hours. So it's like, you know, a couple days, a couple nights of watching a few episodes. But at this point, like, so many of them are just like not good. Like, the level of like good anime to bad is just like bad is just higher, because it's just the same thing as anything else. They're making a lot more.
I'm making a lot more,
because there's a lot more, and which is good. I mean, like, a lot of people, you know, there's more for a lot of people. My preferred genres are, you know, few and far between.
What I think you should do is to reset your brain a little bit. You need to watch Stargate SG-1.
You know, I tried to start watching Stargate. I just couldn't do it. And I also tried to start watching Babylon 5, which I also couldn't do. I tried.
Failure.
Babylon 5, those fucking graphics, man, are
it's rough. Terrible. Yeah,
the graphics are really bad, and also, like, the first five episodes were like very not gripping. So, like, I don't know if it's like a Star Trek thing where the first season's pretty weak and then it gets
it is. It's 100% very weak first season.
Okay, yeah, I might go back and see
that.
Yeah,
but it's a weak season that pays off later, which makes you kind of mad that you have to sit through the first season in order for it to pay off. But it does.
That's one of the nice things about Star Trek is, like, you can, or not TNG specifically, is you can definitely just watch Encounter at Farpoint and then watch Encounter at Farpoint and then the episode with the Black Blob Monster in season one, and then the one with there's like three or four. Maybe five, like, critical episodes from season one on TNG.
Oh, I'm looking this up while you were talking.
I'm not looking up, so I just want to go off the top of my head and know the ones that are important. So you want to watch? I can't remember the name of the episode, but so number one, you want to watch Encounter Farpoint.
Of course, you want to watch. Yeah, Encounter Farpoint. Yeah,
Encounter Farpoint is critical. Like, that is an episode that you have to watch because it establishes everyone. Then you would want to watch the episode that introduces the crystalline entity, which I believe was a first season episode. You absolutely have to watch Data Lore.
Yeah, that's Data Lore. I think it's one with the crystalline entity.
Okay, great. Same episode. Yeah, that is a critical episode for many reasons. Absolutely an episode that needs to be done. You have to watch Data Lore. Then you would want to watch Skin of Evil. Because, you know, that's an important episode. Like,
yeah.
something happens in that episode that's never happened in a Star Trek episode before. Then you could, I think that's really it. You could probably skip every other episode. Every other episode is either filler or not. Or maybe Heart of Glory. That's like a pretty good Klingon episode where they try to get, where the Klingons try to get Worf to join them. They show up.
That is season one. Yeah, that's just a good episode. I don't think it's an absolute necessary episode.
Yeah, Heart of Glory, I wouldn't say is necessary.
No, I'm looking at the
ones I listed were definitely necessary.
I'm going to say, like, the episode that I think is the most necessary to watch.
Oh, and Hide and Q. Jesus Christ! Of course, you have to watch Hide and Q.
Oh, Hide and Q is terrible, dude. Hide and Q is one of the worst Q episodes.
It is. I'm not so here's the thing.
You just like the Napoleonic pig soldiers is what you like.
Yes, also you have to watch all the Q episodes. That's just part of the thing. Like, you have to see all the Q episodes.
I'm gonna say the most necessary episode of season one is Justice, where everyone is running around in the silver underwear. I think that's a necessity. It's like the planet of porn stars.
It's the porn star planet where they want to fucking kill Wesley for stepping on some flowers.
Yes, 100%.
Oh, that's a crusher filler episode.
It is, and it's like, that's the worst part, is that it's a crusher filler episode.
Yeah, well, there's so many crusher, you know the story about why there's so many crusher, you know, Wesley episodes in the first season, right?
It's because Gene Roddenberry had a crush on him.
No, that's not. Well, I mean, so that the statement you just made may or may not be accurate. I don't know. But the real reason there's actually so many Wesley episodes is the writers were pitched to write, like, you need to come up with, like, you know, two Wesley stories or like one Wesley story. And they're like, well, we'll write a bunch of pitches and come up with, you know, come up with the best Wesley story. And they came up with like seven or however many there ended up being, a shit ton. And then there was the writer's strike. So they ended up just filming a bunch of these shitty filler ass Wesley episodes because that's what they had. They were like, these are written, like maybe those might have been like either been intended to hit the floor editing or like be spread across multiple seasons. But no, instead you get seven Wesley episodes in the first season because of the Writers Guild strike. So that's why there's so many Wesley episodes in the first season. So there you go. That's that. There's a fun Trek factoid.
You know, I think you may be mistaking that for a later season because I don't think there was a writer's strike in 86. Or 85. The writer's strike around that time was 88. So I think that might have been like a season two or three thing.
That's possible. I thought it was from the I thought it was from 81.
There was an 81 writer's strike, but Next Gen didn't start till 87. So.
I guess yeah. I don't.
So that's why I think you're thinking 80, the 88 writer's strike, which might have been part of the reason why season two of Next Gen is not that great of a season.
Maybe that's, you know what, it could be the same exact story but just the wrong season. I think that's what I think it is
because 80 in the second season had a lot going against it. But I mean, oh, you know what's another good one that from season one that we didn't talk about is The Big Goodbye.
Oh yeah, that's a good episode too.
I
don't think it's a critical episode, but
no,
it
it's not a critical episode. No, the Dixon Hill episodes are always just kind of fun.
Yeah, they're just fun. And then like you can skip the like. I would say arguably, I actually like the two episode climax of the season. Pretty cool. But like those worm things never ever come back.
That's only a one episode. The second episode is the one with the where they get the people who are frozen from the 90s.
Oh, is
it? Or the 80s or whatever, like the businessman who's like, buy, sell, sell, buy. I don't understand post-scarcity economics.
because the 88 strike. No, it was the 88 strike because the first season was 2 years, 87 to 88.
I guess it would just be difficult to know when the you know, when the filming was, but
yeah, they'd have to, I'm sure if we went deep into Wikipedia articles, I'm sure there's enough Star Trek fans that have like literally probably bullet pointed every episode.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, this episode was because of the writer's strike. This episode was not because of the writer's strike. I'm sure there's plenty of that. I thought the worm was a two-parter, but that's fair.
No, yeah. It was the writer's strike. Well, I guess it would depend because I'll have to look into the actual in-depth notion of the writer's strike. It looks like it ran from March to August of 88.
Mm.
And so that screwed up the fall schedule, and these shows aired in the spring of 88. So I guess it depends on when they were writing it. So it might be like the last few episodes.
Okay, yeah, because that Frozen Wall Street guy, that episode was okay. Because if I remember correctly, that was also the first episode that introduced the new Romulans.
It might be. Yeah, that's the one with the neutral zone. It's the neutral zone. Yeah,
because don't they find him frozen in the neutral zone? Isn't that?
Yes, they find the guys frozen. And remember, one of them is like a country music guitarist.
Yes, yes.
I like playing country music.
Yeah, and he was like, all of these things with me are a death sentence, and. Crusher's just like, nope, you're fine. I just wave this little wand and you're okay. He's like, what? No, so that episode actually is pretty good. I would put that one as like, I would say that one's critical viewing, especially because, you know, it's the first appearance of the new Romulans. So you want to make sure that you catch that.
LQ Sonny Clemons, that was his name.
LQ Sonny Clemons. Yes.
Yeah, the musician dude. And I just, because that's Leon Rippey, who's actually, if he's one of those Canadian character actors. I don't know if he's actually Canadian, but he's always on all those Canadian shows. You know, the like the ones that you see on the WB and shit.
Yes.
The ones that are filmed in Canada. Yes. The Vancouver shows.
And if I'm not mistaken, that episode with the first Romulans, one of the Romulans is played by
Mark Alamo.
Yes, Gul Dukat.
It's Gul Dukat,
arguably, I think, is like, well, I mean, DS9 obviously is the crown jewel of Star Trek, but I believe that DS9 can't exist on its own. I think it has to have the other series to like really drive home how great it is. But the characters in DS9 are just so insane. Like, Gul Dukat is an incredibly good character, and so is Garrick. Like, so many of the characters in
DS9. Oh, yeah. It's like you can't have Deep Space Nine and appreciate Deep Space Nine without having the next generation to kind of be a mirror or the flip side of the coin.
Yes, yeah. The character development in DS9
you can't appreciate, well, yeah. I mean, Deep Space Nine would have dealt with a much Deep Space Nine probably would have been better with today's style of filming and like story structure and things like that, but it also could have made it worse because that kind of high drama that the show tends to have nowadays feels way more melodramatic. You know, like some of the best parts of Deep Space Nine are when they're goofy, like when you have Morn swallowing the latinum or
the baseball episode where they're playing against the Vulcans.
You love the baseball
episode. That episode's great. I love that episode because I love that the Vulcan team captain is like he's just shy of actually getting angry, which is great.
Yes.
Because the Niners are celebrating even though they got their asses fucking beat by
Americans.
So like I thought that was an excellent moment. And also Odo as the Empire yelling at Sisko was pretty great.
Yeah, I mean
rest in peace, Rene Abergonis. You were an excellent human being.
you do love that baseball episode.
But yeah, the episode was really funny. But
as I'm saying, like Deep Space Nine also has, especially season one of Deep Space Nine has some like real clunkers.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like the Brigadoon planet.
There's clunkers. I would say, and it's funny cause we talk about, you know, length, of you know,
and girth. And stuff.
And girth. I think is important to note, and I think that happens less. I mean, still happens. Like, obviously, it still happens with Netflix. But imagine, you know, I would personally imagine that a lot of those clunkers happened for syndicated shows because you're talking double the length of episodes, double the amount of episodes. Like, it's a huge amount. Like, there's gonna be filler. Like,
oh yeah. Well, it goes back to what I was saying about. Let's talk about the original series, is that the original series, part of what makes the original series episodes so, some of them so hard to watch, is that they're half hour shows stretched out to an hour long.
Oh, absolutely.
So
that's why the animated series.
The animated series, it works.
Yeah, the animated series is actually, in my opinion, the animated series is much better than the original series, just because it's the time frame of all of the crises of the various episodes fit perfectly into that animated series length time length. Obviously, there's some very good episodes of the original series, but. There's a lot that's not very good.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. So now that
and of course everyone's performance other than Shatner's is incredible.
Hey, Shatner is incredible as well. Don't knock the Shat.
Shatner is pretty fucking awful. DeForest Kelly is fantastic. Obviously, Sulu, Chekhov. You know, basically everyone else is good.
Well, yeah, Nimoy is great.
Yeah, Nimoy's fantastic. Obviously, Nimoy's fantastic. But then you got fucking Shatner. You know, every so often I think of what the world would be is if Shatner had died and Nimoy had lived. And I think that timeline is the superior timeline.
Think that there was a split there somewhere?
I think that was the unknown defining split of our dimension.
As the fan of alternate history between the two of us, I find that point of divergence to be rather suspect, but I'll give it to you because I agree with you.
I like that point of divergence. It's just that's the universe where things went right. Where things went correctly is the universe where Leonard Nimoy is still alive and Shatner died. that's the universe that they're in. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other things in that split timeline, but I feel that's the defining one. Like if you were dimension hopping and it's like you're asking like, what year is it? Like, it's 2020. Is Leonard Nimoy alive? And they're like, no. Like, we've got to jump. you have to slide.
Well, let's see. Leonard Nimoy died in 2015. Yep, checks out. 2015 is right before we started ramping up the awfulness.
I'm telling you, that's the divergence point.
All right, let's talk about some gaming at least, because considering we're almost at an hour.
Well, I guess you could say that we could talk about the big news.
The big release.
The big release. More giant puns, because they're fucking giants.
Because they're giants. It's Games Workshop is finally releasing...
The Mega Gargants.
Night Titans for Fantasy. You knew Night that Titans was coming.
Fantasy, yeah.
They are releasing the Mega Gargants. Mega Gargants.
Yes.
And the Sons of Behemoth army book.
I think this...
I was going to call it a textbook.
I mean, it is a book of text, so I guess you're not incredible. Yeah, totally wrong. The Mega Gargants are coming. You can run them as mercenaries, so every army can take them, which, you know, kind of unfortunate. I would like to see a fucking destruction army that's actually for destruction players at some point. they're a big fan of just giving the destructions that always seems like such an afterthought, because almost every new release for destruction is like, and you can also use it in any other army.
Yeah. Well, that's just mainly the ogres and then the giants.
Yeah, I mean those are the quote unquote.
That's half news. Technically of the destruction. That's the new stuff.
And yeah, it's half of the destruction force. So half of their entire War Scroll things can be taken by other factions. But they did make the specific giants, the smaller ones, in the Sons of Behemoth list good, because the Ale Guzzler Gargants are poo garbage. So them not being poo garbage in this list is cool. That's very good. I like the models of the Mega Gargants. I feel that they're very characterful. I think they're cool looking. My immediate concern is there are three variants. Is one going to be better, and are you going to have to suffer with not being able to have variety in your army because you just have to have three of the guy with the, you know, the fish stuff, or three of the guy with the executioner's hood?
So I am aware that the Mega Gargants have three variations. Two are 290 points, one is 280 points.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it four? I know it's 480, right? And 490. I'll have to double check that.
Yeah, they have to be more than 200.
Because I believe
200 is the price of a steam tank. They've got to be like 400 points.
Yeah, because I think I read somewhere that, like, because I was thinking, I think it's like 480 and like two or 490,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really stupid, because I'm like, why couldn't they just make it an even 500? Like, they got to add that 10 points there, so when you're done making your list, you got like 15 points left over, and you're like, well, I can't do shit with this now.
Yeah. I can't even use endless spells because I don't have casters.
Yeah, I don't have casters. I don't have anything that could work for this 15 points.
I think they're doing pretty good. I like their rules. Their rules are very funny.
What's the one that you really like?
Oh, my favorite rule ever: idiots with flags.
What does it do?
There's a thing for Gatebreaker, because you have to pick which type of army you want. But if you pick a Gatebreaker army, they get a thing which you can choose or roll. So obviously you would just choose, because, you know, we're gonna pick. But it applies to friendly Gatebreaker Mega Gargants and Man Crusher Gargants, so the smaller ones. And they have six of them, obviously. The number two is called Idiots with Flags, which is you add one to hit made by attacks against a unit that has a totem or any command models. And it's how come these runts think you can stake a claim with a posh flag? It don't mean nothing.
There you go.
Yeah, so I mean, just Idiots with Flags is the funniest sound of a rule ever. I really liked it.
And it goes back to what we were saying about our discussion with 6th edition, where you're just like, no one gets banners. No banners. No, there's absolutely no reason you should give any unit a banner.
Yeah, you should only give units that were unbreakable banners. Because, like, with Orcs and Goblins, like, if you gave your Orcs and Goblins units banners, they would give up more points than the unit breaking than just existing.
That's upset. So you literally are the giant saying idiots with banners.
Yeah.
Idiots with flags. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a stupid rule that should never have existed. Like, I thought that banner rule was really nice. It's like, oh, I'm going to pay more points to make my units worse. That sounds smart. I'm going to do that.
Huh?
Yeah. That was just stupid. I would argue that, like, I wouldn't have even taken them if they were free points. If they cost no points to take banners, I probably still wouldn't have taken them in Orc and Goblin Army. But they have some really interesting rules, which I like a lot, that are new. I think their army has brought some new stuff to the table that other armies don't have, like, a version of. And one of them, and this is why I think that it's going to end up mostly being, you know, sight unseen, obviously, who knows what it's going to be like on the table. But I think that if a giant army ends up being, you know, a competitive list, it's going to mostly be the Gatebreaker Gargants. And specifically because they can do two things. One, they can destroy terrain, which is huge. You can just pick a terrain and you can smash it. And then when you reduce the terrain to rubble, it's all of its rules go away and it's replaced with deadly. And it's also changed. It's specifically changed to rubble scenery. So that's going to be giant for like so many, like if there's a tower scenario or things like that, like where there's a specific piece of scenery that needs to be claimed. That's objective relevant. Being able to destroy it is huge. So there's like, if you can, like, you know, this scenery piece, if you control the tower, you know, your wizards get to cast an extra spell, or if you control the tower, it's worth victory points. Well, if you destroy it, it's not worth shit because it's rubble. So that's huge. I think that's giant. And the other is they can actually kick objectives, like can actually move objectives on the table, which I don't think any army has ever been able to do before. So that's a very exciting rule, like being able to actually move objectives. That's fucking sweet. Like I was like, oh, that's actually very interesting.
What I think is actually one of the more interesting rules for the Mega Gargant or the Sons of Behemoth or whatever is that the majority of the models actually have ranged attacks.
Yes.
Like, so your Mega Gargants have like massive, like almost like giant great cannon type firing abilities. Like, yes. I think only one of them, I think the War Stomper doesn't have it, but the other two do.
But doesn't the War Stomper have the ability to throw models? Wasn't that his gimmick?
He could pick up the models and throw them.
Okay, yeah. So he doesn't have a ranged attack, but he can grab a model that he is fighting and throw it at another model.
So yeah. So
he
like
kinda has a ranged attack. He has a ranged attack when he's in melee.
Well, so the Gatebreaker has the boulder that he could fire, but that's only a one. It's only a one attack. It's rend minus three, damage four. So that's like pretty fucking good for taking out some characters or some large creatures. But the Kraken Eater has three ranged attacks that do D3 damage, and they're at minus one rend, which is really good as well. I mean, that's a little better.
So many of them have damage multipliers, like, which is really good. Like, that's strong because that lets you cleave through hordes. Like, you know, being able to, like, something with two attacks that does D3 damage, that's going to kill a lot of models in one shot.
So one of the things that, and the, there's also a battle trait that is called Chuck Rocks, where you can actually get your Gargant, your Gargant can give an order for a whole unit of Man Crusher Gargants to throw a D3, the same attack as a Kraken Eater.
Okay, that's really good.
Yeah. So, and as I think you and I were talking about, like with the army build for this, if they're still making you use three battle line in 2,000 points, which I don't think that they're changing, you can have six
regular giants and two big ones.
Yeah, six regular giants and two big ones, and you have to have at least three units of them of the regular giants. So if you have one of those three man units, you could probably have three make those attacks at the same time, unless they're
that would be a lot of shots, and that's pretty good. And the attack's strong too, four to hit, three to wound with D3 damage each. That's not nothing, as they say.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still, you're only running eight models in your entire army at that point, so you have to rely on a lot to get a lot done when you're activating
them. I mean Beastclaw Raiders have shown that you can run a very small model count as long as your models count as more than one, and with the Gargants counting as what the Megas count as 20 and the regulars count as 10.
Yeah, something like that.
So like that's huge. That basic rule is a big thing that's gonna give them the ability to actually play the game.
I mean, but you're actually in that case, you're playing with, you know, 100 models on the table.
Right.
But you have You still though, it's like your activations are not that many, so you have to get a fuck ton done.
Yeah, you have to use them very precisely, and so I think the army, like, I'm interested to see if this ends up being like a Khorne situation. So like Khorne is an army that I irks me for a couple reasons, but like the biggest reason that the Khorne army irks me is that the Khorne army is marketed to new players. Like they're in a lot of the starters. They're appealing. The Khorne army on the table is super fucking technical. Like, it's very hard to play that army well. Like, you have to know your combos. You have to get ready with your combos. You have to take the combos, because they're like, the Khorne army lore reads as like, put these crazed savages on the table and just run forward and kill the fucking shit out of stuff. If you play the army like that, they're trash and you'll lose every game. they're like super technical. Like, they're like super, they're a tactician's army. They're an experienced player tactician's army, which, you know, so that annoys me about Khorne. So I'm interested to see if the Mega Gargants end up actually being the army that they appear to be, which is like, put these fuckers on the table and smash shit. Like, that's, if they end up being that army, that'll be great. I hope it's not another like really technical, like, you got to get your combos on point and be, you know, real smart. I know that like you completely give up on competing in the Magic phase. So that might be fine. Like I said, again, the closest comparison I can have to them is the Beastclaw Raiders. And like, the Beastclaw Raiders are not like, you know, they're not top tier or anything, but Beastclaw Raiders are viable. Like, you can play them and you can do well at a tournament with Beastclaw Raiders. You are very restricted on what you can take. You basically have to just take maximum Stonehorns. Like, you have no choice. You have to just keep taking as many Stonehorns.
Maximum Stonehorns is actually the name of my first metal album.
It's a good, that's a great name. Maximum Stonehorns!
Just come out riding like a giant fucking Stonehorn, like puppet, kind of like Spinal Tap style.
Yes, and it's just strapped up with speakers.
Yes.
Yes, I like it. It's possible that they'll be viable like that, but I'm hoping that they're a bit more like dumb than like a Khorne army. Like, I want them to be dumb. I want them to be a giant army where you're just like, yeah, just take these giants and smash. Just try, go forward and smash. Like I would like to see, you know, the army like that. And then, but leave the opportunity to play like a tricky version in there. Like, you know, maybe I think the one with the C net, the one with all the range attacks, the Kraken Eater. Those are the smart guys. So like, I hope that if you build to each Gargant's play style, it really gives you, I hope that all of them are viable, which is unlikely, but I hope that they are. And the other thing about the viability is I hope that they all play reasonably different. Cause like, the Kraken Eaters are supposed to be smart. So they've got things where their guys count as more models. The Kraken Eater. So like, instead of your smaller Gargants count as 15 instead of 10, and your Megas count as 30 instead of 20, which is huge. They also have more artifacts. So like, they lead me to believe that they'll be the trickier list. But I you know, because they have more of that stuff, I don't want them to be the only viable one. Like, I'm hoping that the Man Crusher, the big dude who's just got the club, who throws rocks, that guy.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that that's the dumb list and just works, where it's just like, yeah, you just take two of these and giants, go forward, smash them. like I'm hoping that works.
Yeah, and in actuality, if I was going to like build one of these Mega Gargants, which I will not because I have so much other shit to do, I would probably do the fucking the War Stomper. That's the one with the club, I think. Yeah, the War Stomper's the one that can throw the bodies.
Yes, yeah. War Stomper throws bodies, and then he's also the one who can order to throw rocks.
I believe that they all can do the order for throwing rocks.
I think only Man Crushers can do that. I think Man Crushers are the ones who does the
Well, the Man Crusher Gargants.
Yes.
Yeah.
They give the order to throw rocks. And I think the other thing too is the Man Crusher Gargants have an ability, I'm looking at it now, where if they hit something if they hit hordes, you add two instead of one to their damage, which is huge. Or you add one to their damage on everything. So every attack gets plus one damage on a unit with 10 or more models, which is huge. That's a lot of damage.
And I think you and I were talking, like, one of our main things that just kind of pisses us off about this army is that the Man Crushers themselves could have had a little bit of variation if they so chose. Right. But they did not. Like, yes. So if they use the Chaosy head, that could have been a different type of Gargant or Man Crusher. If they had let you use the Beastmen Cygor or whatever.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed that it's like they did a pretty good job in the pictures of making the army not seem super samey.
And yeah.
I think you're gonna also kind of avoid like a real super sameness, simply because you're gonna have, you know, yeah, okay, your models are pretty similar to the same, but you have, you know, seven models. It's like, okay,
One of the things I absolutely love, and you could check this out too, I'm looking at the Warhammer community page. It's the article called Gargants on the Table, which I saved because that's where the rules were I wanted to look up. But the actual Man Crusher Gargants that they have in the background, and some of the shots obviously are from someone's army, and they're not either not painted or like, this is like, the guy's like, this is as far as I'm going with this. I'm not going any further. They are like, they are literally like base coated, and it's like, this is it?
The far back ones. That was just some dude he was painting to play with.
Yeah. And you're just like, well, I guess we have to have these, and where are our ones from the table? Oh, Nigel sold them in order to make more money. And then we're like, oh no. So they have to like, so they're like, Roger, let's use your Gorgon. But they're not done yet. No one will care.
It's true. No one does care.
I went through like 6 different accents in that entire thing just for like one character.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a confused UK man.
He's a confused chuffed up bloke.
He is a confused chuffed up bloke. I like it.
I don't really think that there was much more gaming stuff that I really felt we needed to have a discussion about.
No, that was totally it, man. There was like that it was the big news.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, workshop, whatever. They'll probably, we're getting towards the winter months. So I'm wondering if this is their, I'm wondering what their big like December release will be, their Christmas release.
I mean, I'd be willing to bet it starts with space and ends with Marines.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. They are going to be putting out the Space Marine Codex, but I thought that was coming out a lot earlier.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It'll be the new models or the new thing that they haven't revealed that's in the new Codex yet. The double Dreadnought. It's a Dreadnought standing on the shoulders of another Dreadnought.
Whoa.
The double knot. It's called the double knot.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And they're not attached in any capacity. Like, they don't look like they were like built together, or like, you know, it's literally a Dreadnought that doesn't have a base, and then a Dreadnought that has a base, and you glue the Dreadnought that doesn't have a base on top of the Dreadnought that has a base.
That would be pretty amazing. I mean, I think it would look a little like the I'm in my head, I was imagining the Goblin one where they got the two giant squigs, the Mangler squigs.
Yes.
That's what I'm kind of seeing right now in my head.
Yes, the double knot.
The double knot. I could, you know what? It's Space Marines. As long as they gave it good rules, the competitive players would buy it and never paint it.
Oh yeah, it doesn't matter.
It does. So
unless
that's
it, unless it sucks ass on the table, it's getting bought.
Yeah, I was actually we could also talk about how Mantic previewed those the Tomb Kings boats.
That's true. Those are pretty dope.
I sent that to Steve because they previewed the I don't remember what it's not the undead fleet, but it's something like that. It's called
the Empire of Ash, I think. Empire of Dust, one of the two.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's Dust. The undead, and the ships are actually all Egyptian themed.
Yeah, they're very cool.
As we all know, Steve gets a mighty boner over Egypt and Egyptian undead.
It's true. I have to admit it. But
Empire of Dust. Yeah, I looked it up.
Empire of Dust. Nice.
But the ships actually look really cool. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, someone was pointing out that the smaller ships don't look as good as the bigger ships, and I'm kind of like, yeah, but I mean, nobody cares about the smaller ships; they want the bigger ones.
No, you just want your big ships. Like but once again, that goes back to the part of that no one's ever made a really good boat game is the fact that they all kind of rely on the same tropes of like, well, you have to have smaller ships in order to combat with the bigger ships. And it's like, do you really, though? Do you really have to? And I got to say, though, that the smaller ships do look like ass in comparison to the bigger ships.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're all fine. But
well, they're Egyptian, so they shouldn't have sails. They should just have like slave galleys is what they should have.
When you compare them, they're nuts.
Yeah. Like triremes. They should be like triremes. I don't know.
I agree with that.
Anyway. Anywho. So I think that's about it. I don't know, quite know anything else. In particular about any of that. I'm probably going to get really drunk tonight and watch Color Out of Space.
Oh, have you not seen it yet?
Oh, I've already seen it, but I think that's what my plan is tonight, is just to get drunk and watch that.
Oh, I mean, that's a good plan. That movie is fucking excellent.
And I could also tell you the you're gonna be calling me an idiot, but you'll call me an idiot regardless. A movie that I quite enjoyed is the new Adam Sandler movie on Netflix, Hubie Halloween.
Well, I won't necessarily call you an idiot because I haven't seen it, and yeah. I have laughed at some Adam Sandler films.
So. And I think, and that's part of like, so I wasn't going to watch it, right? I was just like, whatever, it's a new Adam Sandler movie. But it got surprisingly good reviews, and like the word of mouth on it was pretty good. So I was like, I'll give it a try. You know, it's a family comedy. It's about Halloween. I'll watch it with the family. And it's very much a throwback Adam Sandler movie. It's very similar to, what's it called? The Waterboy mixed in with a little bit of his old CD comedy.
Okay.
Well, so if you're a fan of like Waterboy and pre-Waterboy Adam Sandler, it's kind of a throwback to that.
I find Adam Sandler to me, he reminds me, the actor he reminds me of, but has different output than is Nicolas Cage. Because Nicolas Cage is always on in any movie you watch. Nicolas Cage is always good. That might not be a true statement, but every film I've ever seen with Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage is turned on in that film. I've never seen Nicolas Cage phone him in. I've always seen him do like something great. Even if the movie's not that great, Nicolas Cage will usually be like a highlight of the
movie. The Nick Cage movie where he's with the animals on the boat, he's pretty great in it.
I don't know what that movie is, but I want to see it.
he's a big game hunter who tracked down a white leopard or something like that, and he's trying to get it to America so that he could sell it and make money. But the boat he's on gets taken over by this like terrorist who was captured and was being transported to the United States. So he escapes, and then he lets out all the big game animals that Nicolas Cage had. And so it's like he's got to hunt the animals on the boat.
That sounds incredible.
It would have been incredible except for the fact that all of the side characters make the movie awful. Like it literally should have just been Nick Cage, the terrorist, and maybe a few other people. Famke Janssen's in it, and she looks like she's had a rough couple months. So
I mean, that's you know, that's fair. Everyone has.
Yeah, which is funny because like she's the psychologist who's, you know, supposedly supposed to like talk to this terrorist, but her father also owned a zoo at some point, which puts her at odds with Nick Cage. And I'm like, that's an interesting script choice.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So to bring it back to the comparison, I find Adam Sandler, he's kind of like the anti Nick Cage. Like I would say he's in and does about as many, well, maybe not as many movies as Nick Cage. No one does as many movies as Nick Cage. But his level of quality is all over the place. Like you might watch an Adam Sandler movie and be like, oh, he was really good in that. Like apparently that Precious Gems movie was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. And it's a movie I will never watch again. Because it's a very frustrating movie because you're like, this man is making the worst decisions possible. And I understand it's in service of the script and the character, but it's so hard to watch.
Well, it's like A Simple Plan, like that movie.
Oh, well,
like,
A Simple Plan is, it's not quite as good as A Simple Plan to me.
Well, no, I meant when you're watching A Simple Plan, it's the same thing. It's like people making like just the worst choices. And it's just like, no, it's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, he's your brother. He doesn't understand. Yeah. So that's what I mean by like, you cringe when you're watching it.
Yeah. Oh, very much so.
So that's what I mean.
But the Adam Sandler movies, as opposed to the Nick Cage movies, Nick Cage does everyone's movie if you shovel enough money at him, which it does not take a lot.
Yes.
But the Adam Sandler has like a huge deal with Netflix. So he just literally produces his own films. And that's what he was doing for a while. And it's all just a, not a tax scheme, but it's like almost like a money laundering. It's hard to say because what he does is he writes a movie and says like, you know what I would love to do? I would love to go visit South Africa, you know, go on a safari with my friends. So what he does is he writes a movie about a guy who goes on a safari and
his vacationing scams with the films. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they just write the movie around that. And then, so he gets the trip to go and he brings all of his friends along and they all have a great time, which, you know, as a guy, I'm sitting there going like, that's bullshit. I shouldn't wait. And then I go, whatever, I would probably do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the opportunity, you might as well.
And I think part of what makes me upset about the whole thing is that I myself go, I don't enjoy these movies, but people really love them because they're family friendly, right? Like,
right.
The comedy is not too, like, you know,
it's not too offensive.
Yeah, it's not. Well, it's not offensive. It is offensive, actually, but it's offensive in that like late '90s kind of way. And there's no nudity. There's not a lot of swearing. So it's family friendly. Like, it's that middle America family friendly.
Right.
And so, like, I remember one time
what is it? It's WASP friendly.
It's very WASPy friendly, and especially like WASPy people who don't have a good sense of humor.
Yes.
Friendly. Like, they're like, haha, he got covered in poop. That's funny. Poop is funny, and we don't like talking about poop. But a man getting covering in poop is really funny because that's not something I would like to happen to me. That's my way of explaining it.
Mm.
But this movie is it's a throwback to that Billy Madison where there's a lot of absurdist comedy in it that you're just like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. But it's pretty hysterical. Yeah.
Fucking Sandler.
I know. I always think back, like, I think his first two CDs, They're All Gonna Laugh at You and God, I can't remember the name of the other one right off the top of my head. But I always thought that those were so funny.
Oh, they were huge. Like, in high school? Are you kidding me? Those were,
oh, yeah.
Those were gigantic. Like, every stoner had those in his car.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't even a stoner in high school, and I absolutely loved them. I thought that was the pinnacle of absurdist comedy in the day.
I mean, I haven't listened to them in many, many years, but they were funny. I laughed at them.
What the hell happened to me is the... Well, I mean, like... I still laugh at Tollbooth Willie all the time. $1.25. Welcome to Worcester. $1.25. I don't know why. It is everything about him still makes me laugh. The songs, all of the fucking the guy who's like with the counselor. The what is it? An idiot? The idiot? What is it called? Not the excited Southerner. That was also another one. But it's like, oh, the buffoon. The guy who was just like, I had a snake. I gave it a bunch of beer. It got all fucked up. It was like slithering this way and that. It's
oh,
like,
yes.
It's not funny.
It
it's
was
not,
all fucked up.
Yeah, it's not funny. It's not funny at all. But in the moment, it just encapsulated magic.
I mean, wouldn't magic. Don't you say that's a product of its time? Isn't that the...
No, because I think that there's something
that was made at the right time, because I don't think it would, like, I think if you released those CDs now, they would not succeed.
But I think that there's something to be said about that style of humor that gave us like Tim and Eric.
Oh, and yeah, just like the totally out there thing.
Yeah, like that. It's like, it's so bizarre that it's not in any way it was not the common taste of comedy at that time.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of Tim and Eric because I thought that their show missed far more than it ever hit. Like, I don't think I actually put far enough times in that sentence. However, that all said, their ones that did hit were fucking Celery Man. Celery Man's still one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, Celery Man is the, like, I think Celery Man is...
But on Tane.
Right now, Tane, I could really get into. there's a couple notes on that. One, fucking, that was 10 years ago, 15 years ago? How long was that? Celery Man was like a decade ago.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd still looks the same.
Looks exactly the same. It's just hilarious. Now showing Oyster, like, absolutely ridiculous. Very funny.
8 years ago, it came out in 2012.
Okay, and he still looks exactly the same. I also really like Spaghetti. Spaghetti's pretty funny. Only the first one. They did Spaghetti more than once, I think. But I only really like the first one. He's hiding behind the plant. He just jumps out and says Spaghetti. Like, we saw you there the whole time, and you just jumped up and said Spaghetti. That's not funny.
Well, yeah. I think that there's a lot of, like, and there was a lot of stuff that grew out of Tim and Eric that, because I think the show, I Think You Should Leave, kind of also has that flavor to it, yes. which is on Netflix, and I highly recommend that show. If you, anyone who's listening has not seen it,
yeah, I heard it's really good. It's a bunch of short things, right?
Oh yeah, it's very short, and it's bizarre. Like, okay. And I think, but I think that's like a sub, and that's what I was saying with the Sandler stuff. And I think a lot of his stuff grew out of Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, style. Like Chris Elliott, the Chris Elliott show.
Yeah, the Chris Elliott Kids in the Hall style, like these guys who are very, very smart, who would write for like the Harvard Lampoon and shit, and they would write for these shows. And I think that that's kind of like this weird undercurrent of how do we take something that's like so smart people don't get it to make it just dumb enough that people are going to really laugh at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
and that's how you get celery, man.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's
let
how
a hat, let me get a hat wobble.
Yeah. Let me get a hat wobble. Oh, too much, too much.
can I get a printout of Nude Tane? I'm sorry. What was that? I need a Nude Tane. This is not safe for work. Go ahead. And it's like, your wife is on the line. She says it's an emergency. I'll have to call her back. You've got a lot of important work to do. Like, that is, and he's like, everything about that is a flawless execution in every way. That is one of my favorite, just random absurdist things that's ever been done.
Yeah, I think, and I think there was a split at that time too. And I think like the highbrow is the like Mr. Show. I think Mr. Show is very highbrow of that absurdist.
Yes, and you I have agree with that.
And then you have Tim and Eric, which is the lowbrow version of that that same type of comedy. And they parallel themselves very well.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. That makes a lot of sense because every Mr. Show sketch, although it's absurdist, it has form. Like,
yeah,
it's not just all over the place. Like, you know, like there's a, like, you might not find the bit funny, but it's a bit.
Yes.
With Tim and Eric, it's just like they're just throwing shit at the walls, and like sometimes it looks like a funny face.
I one time wrote a Mr. Show sketch, and it was called I Love My Granddog, and it was about a person, like an old couple, buying a I Love My Granddog sticker for their car, and they're like, oh, this isn't this sweet, I love my granddog. And then what's his face, oh god, why can't I think of his name right now, from Mr. Cross? Show. What's that?
David Cross? Or
yeah, David Cross comes in dressed as like a chud.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, ah, I see you love the Grand Og as well. Come join us.
That I like it.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
It's a very Mr. Show sketch.
Yes, that sounds like a Mr. Show sketch.
And they're like, no, it's my grand dog. Yes, the grand dog. And then like they go down there and they see that they meet the grand dog, the Grand Og, and like they're just hanging out with a bunch of, you know, chuds, and just they're like, we really enjoy this.
That's excellent. I like that.
Yeah. And of course,
and this Mr. Show also has Mustanes, which I think that's one of my favorite bits from there. Are you a slave to the 2-jar grind? putting mustard and mayonnaise out of 2 jars, and Abraham Lincoln kicks the door open. He's like, "Let's get the hell out of here!" Absolutely ridiculous.
I have not thought about that in forever.
Dude, Mustanes. That's my Mustanes was my favorite bit, and then they just kept like escalating. It's like mayo stanes will go bad before Mustanes. It's like, now we've got mayo stanes, mustano mayonnaise. Wow, that's great. Mustanes will go bad before mayonnaise.
I think that reminds me of a little bit of the SNL sketch with Taco Town. Do you know that one? It's Andy Samberg sketch, and it's about Taco Town.
Yes.
And they're like, we take a taco and wrap it in a pizza, or yes. You know, it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes, and the doggy bag is like a gigantic like reusable grocery bag.
Yeah, it's filled with salsa.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, that's hilarious.
And I love at the end, the funny thing is that the stinger at the end of that bit is just I think it's Sandberg and someone else looking at the camera going, Taco Town.
Yeah, I think it's David Hayter.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader.
Yeah. It probably
Who's David
is.
Hader? Who's David Hader? That's a real name.
That's person, isn't it? David Hayter is the sheriff from Stranger Things.
Ah, very good. Okay.
Maybe? I don't know.
Yes, David Hayter. David Hayter is the voice actor of Solid Snake.
Oh, okay.
There we go. David Hayter. That's why I knew that name. He's the voice actor of Selznick.
Well, there you go.
I'm trying to sneak past the guards, but I'm dummy thick, and the clap of my ass cheeks keeps alerting them.
I still don't quite get why that took off like the way it did, but...
What, dummy thick?
David Harbour is the guy from Stranger Things, yeah.
Ah, very good, David Harbour. Yeah. What, you're saying why dummy thick took off?
Yeah, I still don't know. I don't really understand it, but...
Joe, because people like fat asses, bro.
Well, I get that. I like the fat asses as well, but I just don't understand. Like, that meme took off a little bit more, and still around. Like, you still see dummy thick showing up quite a bit.
It's because people still like fat asses.
I guess. Anyway, anywho, go to Planet Earth. Go to Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can contact us. Actually, the best way you can help out the podcast is to like, comment, and subscribe on the iTunes. You could also like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTubes. If you want to contact Steve, he is now on Reddit. I think he's literally just trolling Arnold Schwarzenegger at this point.
I would never troll Arnold. I love Arnold.
I love Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I could probably never be friends with him. He's just way too much of an asshole.
How could you be? You could nobody be friends with Schwarzenegger. He's too big. He's too ballsy.
He's
going to smoke his stogie.
Yeah. He's like one of those guys that like he probably also takes like practical jokes too far, like. You'd go into his house and a big bucket full of water would fall down your head. But the thing is it wouldn't be filled with water. It would be filled with like orange juice or milk. And he'd be like, ha, it's funny. You got doused with the milk.
You were doused with apple juice.
No, it'd be like milk. And you're like, now you are going to smell like musty, like meat. And you're like, dude, it should be water because water's clean. And it's like, at least it'll dry off. It's like milk. I got to wash my clothes. You know, this is not a really good thing. He's like, I find it funny. If you don't find it funny, too bad. Get out of my house. You're like, whatever, Arnold.
I think Schwarzenegger is probably the coolest dude to be like at a party with, but never hang out otherwise.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
Like if I was at a party, like I would be like, hey, is Arnold coming? They're like, yeah. Like, fuck yeah, this party's going to rule. And then like, I never want to see him other than that.
It's a good way of putting it. If you want to get in contact with me, the best way is currently through Instagram. I'm Game Classy Joe on Instagram. I've been taking a break from all social media and posting and shit. I'm probably going to pop back on Instagram. I got some stuff done recently I'll probably put up. I'm so close to finishing off my 6th edition Organ Goblin Army, Steve. So.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know, right? You know, finishing off an army.
How does it feel to be patronized?
when did 6th Ed end? 2003, 2004?
I think it was 2000. No, it wasn't 2002. Well, let's see. Well, when do you consider the end? When 7th edition came out?
Yeah.
All right, 7th edition came out in 2014.
So that's when it ended. At 2004 you said?
2014.
No, that's when 7th edition 40K ended.
Oh, right. My bad. So then it must be, yes. Let's see. I'm looking up here. 7th edition came out. I was
2006. Just saying that. It was 2006.
Okay, very good. So 14.
That's what I thought. It was like 2004. Oh my god. So 2006.
14-year-old army.
Yes, 14 years too late.
Yes, 14 years too late.
Whatever. I don't care. I'm gonna have a beautifully painted fantasy orc and goblin army, and it'll be on my shelf gathering dust.
That sounds great. Yeah,
and I don't care.
More power to you. I don't have a 6th edition army, and I won't have a 6th edition army.
this is my fourth completed army for Warhammer Fantasy Battles that can be used for 6th edition. I have Empire, of course. I'll have orcs and goblins. I have a dwarf army, and I have a Skaven army.
You think you'll ever play a single game?
Maybe. I bet you I could wrangle someone into it.
Yeah, that's not the question. As do you think you will actually play a single game?
Yeah, probably at some point. I don't. It's not on the to-do list right now, Steve. Painting is on the to-do list.
All right.
And my next one that I'm going to attempt to do is I'm going to attempt to finally complete, and now you're going to laugh at me, I'm going to finally complete this, a 2,150-point Bretonian army for 6th edition.
Hammerhand.
What?
I just screamed out Hammerhand.
Hammerhand.
That's very funny.
No, I wanted to do Bretonian. I have tried on.
This is a stupid question. You obviously have all the models already.
I do already have the models.
Okay.
Yes. Good. Well, Steve.
Hey, you know what? I thought maybe you were going after something you didn't already own, and you were gonna do like a, you know, I'm going to try and, you know, hunt and collect this army while making it. You know, I assumed you did, but I just, you know, wanted to be sure.
The only fantasy army that I probably do not have a full complete collection of is undead, like vampire counts.
Yeah.
I just never liked the models. I never cared for them. I thought there was like a mishmash list. I don't think that there was a very there was no consistency in how the models looked. Rob Hawkins, who listens, has this beautifully painted vampire counts army, and he does a fantastic job with them. It's just not something for me.
I think his army was before they really started doing the like all over the place thing. I thought sixth edition had a very, you know, distinct, everything looked proper together in sixth edition. And then as they started adding new stuff and the weirder stuff, the models started not quite gelling, in my opinion. But now I think that the way they've split up death works perfectly.
Yeah. I mean,
because if you look at how they designed the, Nagash's lieutenants, the Mortarks. If you look how they're designed, and then you look at the troops that are supposed to go with each Mortark, it's kind of like, oh, okay. Like there is actually a design.
And I think once they took the undead or the vampire counts into eighth edition, I think they finally got like at least the plastics correct, but the zombies still look bad.
Yeah.
Like the zombies look bad in sixth edition, but I think that they looked almost worse.
Yeah, still the same models. They're horrible. They're just terrible. They're the undead's chaos marauders. They're just awful. Yeah. But Rob did a really good job of, I guess it doesn't really matter because I mean he made the army look coherent. It wasn't the models that did that. Like
that was like sheer force of will. It's like when
he sculpted the like flaming torch look. So because I think everything has like a flaming skull. He's got like kind of like the classic Headless Horseman look where like the Headless Horseman's on fire, but they're all skulls. So like, that's kind of like he did that. That wasn't the models. But I will say that the zombie models are trash, poo-poo garbage.
Yeah, and which is a shame because like in sixth edition, zombies were a huge part of it.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't, you could get away with not using them in seventh and eighth. But in sixth edition, you needed to have zombies.
Okay, the blob of zombies and then the zombies. So you had the small block of zombies that you grew every turn to like get to absolutely absurdist levels. And then of course you would the classic. I'm going to res some zombies here on your flank, and then Von Hell's dance them into the
tank.
You know, that was huge too. Because you'd want to do zombies more than skeletons, because zombies were super easy to summon and you had all those bonuses. So you'd want to get the rank bonus so you could bust their flank with a rank bonus. That was always the big thing for zombies. And the models, I mean, I guess when it was 2004, the models weren't, you know, that bad, but they're terrible now, like awful.
Well, yeah, I mean, those zombies were released, I think, in 97, 98.
Yeah, because they were for 5th edition undead, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were for tail end 5th edition. They were part of that plastic release. They came out around the same time as the skeletons that were used forever.
Yeah, those skeletons. The ubiquitous skeleton.
Yeah, and I actually find it pretty funny that GW has never updated zombies. Like, you think that would be a pretty obvious, like, update. Like,
yeah, and considering they've made how many new infantry units for undead and never updated zombies, it's so odd.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have all the new skeletons, which you could still technically use for the Legions of Nagash. You have ghosts. You have
there's the entire new undead army, the Cataphracts.
Yeah, which, don't get me started on that. But you also have the ghouls for the Ghoul King and all that.
Yep, the new ghouls look good.
You just have not updated zombies, and you think that there would be a zombie king. Like, they could do a zombie king army And it would be pretty cool, I think. Yeah.
They could do it. All right. You know, they could even like, if they wanted to, they could get tricky with it and just do they could do a mixed sprue with, like, you just grab some Empire dudes and you grab a sprue of Empire men, you grab a sprue of elves, and you grab a sprue of something else, right? You put all three of those sprues in a box, and then you add the supplement sprues. So, like, these sprues are to make the Empire Men zombies. These sprues are to make the dwarf.
Oh, they would never do that anymore.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying, like, they could do something like that. Like, it wouldn't be hard. I think they would do that to save costs rather than, you know, increase them, because then they're not even making a new kit.
So I made you those Marauders. Did you take a look at any of the other stuff I threw in the box?
No, I haven't opened the box yet.
I threw in a bunch of those Warmaster undead guys.
Oh, nice.
Just to throw them in there. I figured you hadn't opened it up because you probably would have at least said something at that point.
Yeah, no, it got shelved, and then I realized that I no longer have a place to really hobby or keep any of these models, so I'm going to sell everything.
Of course.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I literally don't have space for any of this shit. Well, it looks like we're getting out of the hobby for a while.
Yeah, until you get back in. And, but you know what this does? And I'm a little upset by this, just for, because what it does is that you're going to, when you get that space again, you're going to make a whole nother Nurgle army.
No, that's not happening. I will never do that again. That was too much. And I will also never do an army the way I did that army ever again.
You bought way too much for that army at one time.
Yeah, that's for damn true.
That's why it's, you know, when I write these army lists for, like, what I'm going to paint, right now it always comes down to list first. It doesn't matter how bad the list is.
Build the list, and then worry about the rest later.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it first. Like, I'm like, okay, $21.50 I have to spend. Let's max out characters to just, you know, that's going to eat up a lot of the points right there. And let's build the units that I want to build.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't necessarily, you know, have a giant unit of Savage Orcs in my army, but I wanted to paint some, so I made a little 10-man unit in it. Yeah, they're not going to be that effective, but you know what? I wanted to paint it, and it looks cool, so.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think, like, in my head, I'm thinking maybe I'll be ready to, like, have a hobby again, around, and have the space, and be around the time that whatever this mysterious Warhammer Old World thing occurs. So maybe that'll be my step back in.
It could very well be. And then you'll be texting me going, hey, Joe, do you have any 6th edition Chaos stuff? And I'll be like, yes, I do.
We'll see. I mean, like I said, I'm still intrigued by what that could possibly be. I'm hoping it's not just, you know, it's 6th edition. Like, I'm hoping it's not that. Like, that'd be fine, I guess. But, like, I don't want to be like, yeah, I guess. That's the response I don't want. I would rather be like, this sucks, than yeah, I guess.
I'm actually kind of with you.
Yeah.
I would prefer. I think it's actually going to be nice, because when it does come out, I'm hoping that it is going to be at least somewhat equivalent, that I can pull some of the stuff that I already have into an army, right? Mm-hmm. But who knows what it's going to be like? I think the one thing that I would be probably pissed off the most is if you are unable to field smaller units, like if it is pretty much a 30-man unit or bust.
Oh, if it's back to 8th edition, that would be awful. I would hate that. That was one of the reasons I stopped liking 7th edition, because 7th edition was the first 7th edition was the beginning of the bigger frontage, where it's like you have to be 5-man frontage, and what that ended up leading to was, like, you started to get the way bigger frontages, and then 8th edition was when you started having units that were like the 10-man frontage.
Well, 8th edition had the horde rule for if you had a unit bigger than 50 models.
Right. So it's like, I'm going to take 70 dudes with a 10-man frontage. Yay.
And it was awful. It's terrible.
I don't like that. I like 16 models should be the minimum size for a regiment. Even if you never take 16. Like, I mean, a lot of armies did not take 16, but 16 was a perfectly sized block. It looked good on the table. It maneuvered well on the table. It was fine. And if you wanted a bigger block, go going to 20 was fine. And the sprues made sense because every sprue had four guys.
Absolutely.
So I did not like that shift. And then the big horde thing, that because I played up until 8th edition, I stopped. I didn't like 8th edition at all. I thought the new rules were terrible, and I just sold my shit. I didn't set them on fire like so many people did for
I think whatever. Only one person.
Yeah, but still, so it just that was this kind of thing. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'm definitely going to keep an eye on it. So we'll see. But yeah, maybe by the time it's ready, I'll be ready to be, you know, have the hobby again.
Yeah, probably. I'm actually looking at people who have burned their armies. Let's see. I'm going to look up videos of it. Warhammer set. Oh, this, why is this Bell of Lost Soul army from, okay, this is 2015. Yeah, this looks about the time when they done the it looks like there's only one person who actually did it. A man who hates Age of Sigmar so much he set his $600 army on fire.
That's pretty funny.
And I'm looking at it, it looks like it's a dark elf army, or was a dark elf army. Yeah, whatever. Guy's an idiot.
Yeah, absolutely.
He doesn't even quite know the basics of combustion. He's like throwing gasoline on it, and I'm like, whatever. Okay, so
I mean that's always funny. It's just like, yes, I'm going to burn this thing that I could just sell.
Tell me about it. So, Steve, until next time.
I don't know. I pretend I redid the heroic brew speech from last episode.
Heroic brew.
Heroic brew.
Game classy.